Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well planned. And don't miss our 1 minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black. And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of 1 minute highlights from past guests. Hear more 1 minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably, they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that comes in from the point of view of the buyer.
You're the trustee of your company's 401k or profit sharing plan. You have certain responsibilities. What can happen when things go wrong? We ask Buck Blanton.
We have a responsibility when we run qualified plans as a business owner, or in that world we call it a plan sponsor. That person has a responsibility of due care and due loyalty to the participant. And sometimes we forget that when we run plans and we do other things. But as you said, those breaches can become kind of onerous. The 2013 audit year, there were 3,566 audits performed by the Department of Labor, and more than $2.7 billion with a B dollars in fines and penalties were levied. All of those things can be done and levied against corporate officers personally. It's not your corporate seat that might get sued or levied. It's going to be you personally.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing family businesses in their management transition? We ask Transition Consulting Group's David and Paul Karofsky for their thoughts regarding this topic.
As the baby boomers are coming of age and getting a little bit older, as the next generation is starting to get a little bit older and come into that leadership position, this transfer of not only monetary wealth, but you're talking about the businesses, the assets, whatever it might be, there needs to be a plan to transfer that seamlessly. To my dad's point, the more planning you do and you talk about it as to what that transition of ownership looks like, what is that transition of leadership? Those two are not the same. They can be similar in tie, but they can be mutually exclusive as well. But until you really have a plan as to how you transfer that business from one generation to the next, it's very difficult to do it.
When a parent passes away, sometimes dealing with mom or dad's effects can be challenging. Here's senior real estate expert Allison Whitaker.
There's different levels of sorting through things. And so we work with organizers and professional inventory people, estate sale planners. Basically, they come in and they will help you sort. Is this a donation pile? Is this a for sale pile? Are these items things that we need to send off to our auction house in London to get appraised and actually auction off? There's different auction houses as well, not just Sotheby's. If it's sports memorabilia, you know, that we would recommend using. There's also that element of, is it a good time to sell the house when it comes to taxes? Taxes are a whole nother conversation, and a lot of times people think, well, the market's up, we should just sell the house, but there could be some tax ramifications depending upon the way the estate has been set up, that maybe it's better to rent it out for a couple years.
How would an attorney specializing in professionals handle a case differently? We asked Miranda McCroskey.
A young man came to me with an allegation of a hit and run, and he was looking at jail time. Going to jail was going to be a big problem for a lot of reasons. So I provided the district attorney with all the mitigating factors, all the factors that they could consider in determining his sentence. And I stressed to the DA the consequences of the criminal conviction on this young man. And the benefit is he was able to do a diversion program, which means avoiding the conviction entirely. The less obvious benefit was that he avoided the criminal conviction that would have affected his path because he wanted to be a physical therapist. From the application process to the physical therapy board through the renewals that each board has, he would have had to bring that conviction up year after year and discuss that. And so he got to avoid all of that.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
With all the social media platforms to choose from, why has YouTube become so popular? We asked Joan Pounds.
The younger generations do a lot more visually, so a lot of times your YouTube videos and things like that are better ways to reach out to them. I found out through my son, actually, who's a teenager, that YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. And I never even thought about going to YouTube to find out how to do something. And the beauty about YouTube is we can create our own videos right now from our phones and upload them to YouTube. And the neat thing about that is you're creating your own celebrity during that time. People buy from those they know, like, and trust. And that's one way for people to reach out, begin to know you and to like you and to trust you.
Family businesses can be very challenging sometimes. Here's Roseanne Levy from the Roark Group.
What I tell people is think about your family and think about working with them. We addressed many issues of families who work together and really helped them resolve them. What are they dealing with? What are their major issues? And, you know, just from there, we, you know, work with the family, work with all members of the family. Of course, all the family members have to be in agreement to say, okay, we want to make this better. We want it to work, because God knows in many cases they're not interested in cooperating and they each go their own way, and then the business tends to not thrive. So we're very much on top of what families go through. And I did have one member, I love to share this, who said, gosh, if we could only learn to run our businesses with our heads and not our hearts, we'd be a lot more successful. So that's always stayed with me, and it's really the truth.
John Murphy and David Horwich help business owners think like business buyers. Here's some of the common things that they see out there.
We tend to find many of the same things. We look at management. We look at the financial foundation. How good are the numbers, both historically and in the future? We look at the growth. What we often find is business owners spend too much money on growth. They plant a lot of seeds, and they plant too many seeds because they don't take enough time sometimes up front to determine what are the criteria they should use to judge the seeds, so they kind of plant a lot.
Another common theme that's been running through a lot of our clients over the last year or so has been sales operations and sales strategy and sales operations and development. A lot of companies that we've been working with, they're stalled out in growth and they're not sure why. And what we have found in taking a good hard look at them is that they don't have a great sales strategy in place. So we help them assess that, put that in place, and then get it going.
Today's topic is about cost reduction, specifically LED lighting. Here's Chaz Dykes.
LED lights are something in the neighborhood of 70% more efficient. So it's a substantial, very significant savings. Whenever I explain our program of cost reduction through LED retrofit, people say, oh yeah, that's exactly like what they're doing with the solar panels. And I'll tell you what, it's really very, very different than that. What people fail to understand is that if you go with the solar projects for your house and you have the panels put on, you don't own those panels. The company owns those panels, and you're just leasing them.
Oh.
The company goes in and goes to the feds and to the local government and gets all of those credits and all those rebates. They do. With my program, you own the lights, you get all of that savings in addition to the reduced cost.
Okay, so you're ready to start your exit plan. We asked for three quick tips from Stacy McKibben.
Get your number. What is it that you're retiring to or that you're working towards? Understand what that is. That'll help your team to be able to help you to work backwards from that. So know that number and be prepared. Two is look around at your team. Core values of a company are exuded and exemplified by their team. More often than not, the challenges that I see in profitability are due to the fact of lack of productivity by the team. Lastly is run your business like you drive your car. car. You look at your car with a dashboard. You would get in a car and you would make sure that you had enough gas, that there was no check engine light on. All of those same things apply in your business. Do you have a clear dashboard? Do you understand how to read it? You don't need to be an accountant, but you do need to understand what the numbers are, and that is the health radiant of a business.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that comes in from the point of view of the buyer.
If you're the trustee of your company's 401k or profit sharing plan, you have certain responsibilities. What can happen when things go wrong? We ask Buck Blanton.
We have a responsibility when we run qualified plans as a business owner, or in that world we call it a plan sponsor. That person has a responsibility of due care and due loyalty to the participant. And sometimes we forget that when we run plans and we do other things. But as you said, those breaches can become kind of onerous. The 2013 audit year, there were 3,566 audits performed by the Department of Labor, and more than $2.7 billion with a B dollars in fines and penalties were levied. All of those things can be done and levied against corporate officers personally. It's not your corporate seat that might get sued or levied. It's going to be you personally.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing family businesses in their management transition? We ask Transition Consulting Group's David and Paul Karofsky for their thoughts regarding this topic.
As the baby boomers are coming of age and getting a little bit older, as the next generation is starting to get a little bit older and come into that leadership position, this transfer of not only monetary wealth, but you're talking about the businesses, the assets, whatever it might be, there needs to be a plan to transfer that seamlessly. To my dad's point, the more planning you do and you talk about it as to what that transition of ownership looks like, what is that transition of leadership? Those two are not the same. They can be similar in tie, but they can be mutually exclusive as well. But until you really have a plan as to how you transfer that business from one generation to the next, it's very difficult to do it.
When a parent passes away, sometimes dealing with mom or dad's effects can be challenging. Here's senior real estate expert Allison Whitaker.
There's different levels of sorting through things, and so we work with organizers and professional inventory people, estate sale planners. Basically, they come in and they will help you sort, is this a donation pile? Is this a for sale pile? Are these items things that we need to send off to our auction house in London to get appraised and actually auction off? There's different auction houses as well, not just Sotheby's. If it's sports memorabilia, you know, that we would recommend using. There's also that element of, is it a good time to sell the house when it comes to taxes? Taxes are a whole nother conversation, and a lot of times people think, well, the market's up, we should just sell the house, but there could be some tax ramifications depending upon the way the estate has been set up, that maybe it's better to rent it out for a couple years.
How would an attorney specializing in professionals handle a case differently? We asked Miranda McCroskey.
A young man came to me with an allegation of a hit and run, and he was looking at jail time. Going to jail was going to be a big problem for a lot of reasons. So I provided the district attorney with all the mitigating factors, all the factors that they could consider in determining his sentence. And I stressed to the DA the consequences of the criminal conviction on this young man. And the benefit is he was able to do a diversion program, which means avoiding the conviction entirely. The less obvious benefit was that he avoided the criminal conviction that would have affected his path because he wanted to be a physical therapist. From the application process to the physical therapy board through the renewals that each board has, he would have had to bring that conviction up year after year and discuss that. And so he got to avoid all of that.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
With all the social media platforms to choose from, why has YouTube become so popular? We asked Joan Pounds.
The younger generations do a lot more visually, so a lot of times your YouTube videos and things like that are better ways to reach out to them. I found out through my son, actually, who's a teenager, that YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. And I never even thought about going to YouTube to find out how to do something. And the beauty about YouTube is we can create our own videos right now from our phones and upload them to YouTube. And the neat thing about that is you're creating your own celebrity during that time. People buy from those they know, like, and trust. And that's one way for people to reach out, begin to know you and to like you and to trust you.
Family businesses can be very challenging sometimes. Here's Roseanne Levy from the Roark Group.
What I tell people is think about your family and think about working with them. We address many issues of families who work together and really help them resolve them. What are they dealing with? What are their major issues? And, you know, just from there, we, you know, work with the family, work with all members of the family. Of course, all the family members have to be in agreement to say, okay, we want to make this better. We want it to work, because God knows in many cases they're not interested in cooperating and they each go their own way, and then the business tends to not thrive. So we're very much on top of what families go through. And I did have one member, I love to share this, who said, gosh, if we could only learn to run our businesses with our heads and not our hearts, we'd be a lot more successful. So that's always stayed with me, and it's really the truth.
John Murphy and David Horwich help business owners think like business buyers. Here's some of the common things that they see out there.
We tend to find many of the same things. We look at management. We look at the financial foundation. How good are the numbers, both historically and in the future? We look at the growth. What we often find is business owners spend too much money on growth. They plant a lot of seeds, and they plant too many seeds because they don't take enough time sometimes up front to determine what are the criteria they should use to judge the seeds, so they kind of plant a lot.
Another common theme that's been running through a lot of our clients over the last year or so has been sales operations and sales strategy and sales operations and development. A lot of companies that we've been working with, they're stalled out in growth and they're not sure why. And what we have found in taking a good hard look at them is that they don't have a great sales strategy in place. So we help them assess that, put that in place, and then get it going.
Today's topic is about cost reduction, specifically LED lighting. Here's Chaz Dykes.
LED lights are something in the neighborhood of 70% more efficient. So it's a substantial, very significant savings. Whenever I explain our program of cost reduction through LED retrofit, people say, oh yeah, that's exactly like what they're doing with the solar panels. And I'll tell you what, it's really very, very different than that. What people fail to understand is that if you go with the solar projects for your house and you have the panels put on, you don't own those panels. The company owns those panels, and you're just leasing them.
Oh.
The company goes in and goes to the feds and to the local government and gets
credits.
All of those credits and all those rebates. They do. With my program, you own the lights, you get all of that savings in addition to the reduced cost.
Okay, so you're ready to start your exit plan. We asked for three quick tips from Stacy McKibben.
Get your number. What is it that you're retiring to or that you're working towards? Understand what that is. That'll help your team to be able to help you to work backwards from that. So know that number and be prepared. Two is look around at your team. Core values of a company are exuded and exemplified by their team. More often than not, the challenges that I see in profitability are due to the fact of lack of productivity by the team. Lastly is run your business like you drive your car. You look at your car with a dashboard, you would get in a car and you would make sure that you had enough gas, that there was no check engine light on. All of those same things apply in your business. Do you have a clear dashboard? Do you understand how to read it? You don't need to be an accountant, but you do need to understand what the numbers are, and that is the health radiant of a business.
At BEI, Business Enterprise Institute, our mission is helping owners benefit from their life's work. We accomplish this by providing comprehensive, continual exit planning training, marketing support, certification, and plan design to business owner advisors. Thousands of exit plans have been created over the past 10 years by hundreds of advisors using our planning software to help owners grow, protect, and transfer business value. To learn more about exit planning and BEI, call us toll-free at 888-206-3009 or visit us online at www.exitplanningforadvisors.com. Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting EXIT PLAN with no spaces to 44222. That's EXIT PLAN to 44222. Again, text EXIT PLAN to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Hi everyone, thanks so much for joining me once again today. Always a pleasure to have you with me. You know, we interview a lot of advisors. We've interviewed well over 1,000 advisors. And today we have an interesting lineup for you. I think you're going to find this very interesting, and I would encourage you to grab something to take some notes with. My first guest today is George Bandarian, and he has a company called Exit to Impact, of which he is the founder in Glendale, California. And George created a multi-million dollar exit in 2018, and now he's helping other entrepreneurs double to quadruple their company value and create a lucrative exit so they can become independently wealthy and free to pursue their next and greater calling in life. And we're going to be talking about something that he calls the exponential entrepreneur. So, George, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Bill. I'm delighted to be here today.
Yeah, George, my pleasure. We've talked for a while about a variety of different things, and I think the last time we talked was a while ago. You were still in your business, so I'm anxious to hear more about that. So tell us a little bit about your journey and how you grew your business 10 times and exited, and as you say, with no regrets.
Sure. I'd be happy to touch on that real quick. So I had the good fortune of taking over a family business, but it was not one of these where it was just teed up and money was coming in left and right. It was actually not profitable and on the brink of obsolescence. We were in a rapidly changing technology back almost like 20 years ago, where the digital was replacing analog in the paperless world that we were in. So I did that and had a lot of fun with it, kind of took this fledgling business and grew it and had a lot of fun, learned a lot. But really got to a point where even though it was nice to help companies eliminate paper and automate their workflows, you know, I just felt like I had a greater calling in life. I felt like there was something bigger in store for me. And I think a lot of business owners kind of feel that they might have started a marketing agency or construction company or HVAC repair. And in the beginning, it was really meaningful and they were passionate about it. But gets to a point where, you know, you get burnt out, you get tired, you might even feel stuck or handcuffed, as I did toward the end, especially when you know in your heart and your soul that there's something more you're meant to do. And I think that was the point where you and I initially met. I was in the process of, I'd read the book Built to Sell, and I was implementing everything from the value builder system to dramatically increase the value of the business in preparation for an exit, and I appreciated the advice and the time you spent with me, and I was able to implement that and create, you know, a pretty nice exit where it was essentially predominantly kind of an all-cash deal, and I did not have one of these long earnouts and holdbacks. Essentially, it was very much a you know, kind of hand the keys, transition clients and kind of gone the next day type of scenario. Yeah. So.
And I hear that. I hear a couple things that you said. I hear frequently. Number one is a lot of owners have either lost the fire in the belly, or they've taken over a business and they've said, you know, I never intended for this to be my life. You know, I wanted to take over this thing, maybe to help out a family member or a parent, or maybe because it was the best opportunity at the time. But I really want my life back, and I want to get out of this. And the other thing you mentioned is preparing and saying, hey, I realize if I try to sell it as it is, it's not going to be good for anybody, so I need to go to work on growing the business. And I'm glad you brought up John Warlow and Built to Sell, because he was just a guest just recently again, and he's always thinking about ways to help business owners grow their business. So I'm glad all of that worked. So what were some of the at what point did you come to that realization that, you know, I've got to do this, and what kind of timeline did you give yourself to grow and sell the business from that point?
Right. So, you know, many times it can be a moving target, but I definitely got to a point about 3 to 5 years before the exit, where I really had adopted that built to sell mentality. And so I'd be constantly in touch with different brokers from within my industry to be getting M&A updates. And I would be, you know, just educating myself and preparing for, you know, what I expected to be the, you know, my first biggest kind of transaction of my life, if you will. And you're right, and I kind of take that for granted. I think that, you know, as I've started to work with other entrepreneurs now, I realize that a lot of people are just so focused in the business, and they may not be taking all of the preparatory steps. It's kind of like they just want to go until the day they're ready and say, okay, I'm ready to sell. And so I like your opening about, you know, you should have started planning 5 years ago, but if not then, at least, you know, today's the next best day.
Yeah, it's hard for people. I just gave a speech yesterday to a Vistage group up in San Jose, California, and it doesn't matter if I go to San Jose, if I go to New Jersey, if I go to Indiana, it doesn't matter. It's the same out there for everybody. Everybody's busy and a little overwhelmed and thinking, I gotta start doing something, but I don't know where to start. So what were some of the first things that you did to get started? And then we'll move on to your topic, because I really want to spend some time on that. But what were some of the first things that you did when you said, okay, I'm going to give myself 5 years, 3 to 5 years to get it ready? What were the first steps?
Sure. So so the first step is, you know, getting my Value Builder score and just seeing, you know, having an independent assessment that I could get online. It takes 10-15 minutes, and be able to just find out, where do I stand, you know, where am I good, where do I need to work on, because I didn't know. And at that time, I didn't know to look at everything through the ideal buyer's lens. And this is something that we teach now. It's, you know, the concept of your buyer persona has been popularized in marketing when we think about our customers, right? Envisioning the customer. If we sell to marketers, you know, marketing Mary, she's 35 to 45. She loves to write. She's active on social, right? So this whole idea about envisioning that customer, but unfortunately, a lot of business owners don't do the same thing with the ideal business buyer. So today, start thinking about who's going to be that best buyer for your business, and what are the things that they're going to care about? What are the things that they're going to give you more money or see as a risk, and therefore discount the value on? And so those were the things that I started to work on as I educated myself. So specifically, I implemented, you know, went from it being classic small business where, you know, I was kind of the brains of the operation, and then there was everybody else, the hub and spoke, as we call it in Value Builder system. And I built a management team, and, you know, I've implemented a lot of the best practices. So I've been a big follower of Bernd Harnisch and Rockefeller Habits and Scaling Up. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he talks about is every company, no matter what industry you're in, has only three main departments. There's sales and marketing, which is bringing customers in. There's manufacturing slash service slash operations, which is taking care of that customer, giving them whatever they wanted, making sure they're happy. And then the third one is finance and admin and kind of HR and everything else underneath that. So the key is to have one person owning each of those three areas so that you can, you know, so that your company really has managers or a management team that can run itself and that you're not dependent. So that was probably one of the biggest things that I did. Took some time and going through different people. But at the end, that was one of the things that led to my exit being what it was because the buyer was very comfortable that if George is out of the picture, there are these three great people that can continue to run it. And they're the ones that are doing most of the heavy lifting today anyway.
George,
so that was like
one more.
Yeah.
Yeah. One more question. What do you think would have happened if you would have just not done any of this stuff and just gone right to market with the business at the point that you were at?
That's where 10xing the value comes from. I mean, you know, I think literally it would have probably been worth 1/10 of what we got for it because it was just not ready. It was not.
Yeah.
It was not. The financials, like the performance wasn't there, but more importantly, all the other things that a buyer looks at.
Yeah.
So it can be that dramatic. I mean, I'm not exaggerating, you know, like that's the difference between, you know, a $1 million sale versus a $10 million sale, you know?
Yeah. And the point there also is that as the statistics bear out right now, only about 1 out of 10 buyers who tries to sell their business is successful at it. They either get dejected or rejected along the way because their value is too low, or they get into a due diligence process and the buyers say, forget it. You're too unorganized. You're too unprofitable. You're too all about the owner. So let's talk about this this concept you have called the exponential entrepreneur, which I love. I love the title of it. I can't wait to hear about it. What is it? How does it work? And how do listeners work into this?
Sure. So let me provide a little bit of context, and then I'll dive into a little bit more about what it is. So when I sold the company, and again, I didn't have a long earnout, so immediately I didn't, you know, it was like, what am I going to do next? But the post-exit identity crisis, as I call it now. And so the first thing that I did is I picked up the Value Builder system, and I said, this was an amazing tool that helped me have a life-changing outcome, and now I want to do the same for others. So immediately I started speaking, and I started getting brought in by friends. You mentioned Vistage. I've been familiar with Vistage and EO and YPO and other CEO groups and mastermind groups and peer groups. And so started working with owners and thought that I was mainly going to be, like, at least for the time being, until I figured out what was next, your title, like an exit coach, helping business owners build value and create a lucrative exit. What I realized was while people say that, they're really in what I call scale mode. So if we just lump the stages of business as, you know, startup, scale, and exit, people are really in the scale stage. And there's a ton of things that go on in scale. There's 21 common issues, but they boil down to three categories, which are time, team, and money. So, you know, either the owner has no time, they're just running around with a chicken with their head cut off. It's team issues. How do I recruit and retain the right people? Do I have the right people on the right seats in the bus? Or money, whether it's the business's revenue or profits, or, you know, the owner's actual take-home cash flow. And so I started coaching on those issues. I thought I was going to be getting people just ready to exit. And here we are actually implementing things like strategic planning and differentiation and competitive advantage. And then in the meanwhile, the clients started bringing to me, because I've always had this like life coaching inclination. I'm not certified, but I've done a lot of it. And so it became more than just the business. It became, you know, what's going on, you know, in terms of at home, you know, or, you know, what's going on, and do I need a checkup from the neck up? You know, so much of our success is determined by our mindset, as you know, and the stress that comes in. So it really became this coaching around every aspect of the person, not just the business. And so that feeds into what I'll get into about the exponential entrepreneur. And then the other thing that I noticed was that some people said they want to exit because, like you said in the beginning, there's some frustration, but all of a sudden you start working together and what you find is like they really want to go start another company, or they have an idea for a new innovative product or service. And in some cases, it's chasing a shiny object, and maybe they shouldn't. And in other cases, it's really good, but they're trying to figure out how to balance their time and how do you actually go do that without hurting and hurting your current business. Other people, you know, other clients, you know, fall into yet another category, which is this more of this autopilot where, you know, they say they want to sell, but they're maybe they're not. But they sure would love to get that freedom and be able to put the business on autopilot. And if they're not going to put it on autopilot to go start another company, you know, maybe they're a boomer and really they just want to start enjoying a little bit more out of life, start traveling a little bit more. And out of that comes like this, you know, half retire concept. So all these things were coming up, and then the thing that really throws a wrench in all this is the fact of what's the reality of what's going on in the marketplace. So one is the market timing risk. I'm an optimist, but I'm very nervous about, you know, what's happening and how much longer this can happen, how much longer this can go on, and what's going to happen to valuations as soon as, you know, some turn in the economy. So I'm very concerned about that. But more than that is the proliferation of exponential technologies. And that's in part where the exponential entrepreneur system comes from, is there's all these exponential technologies that have come on and are rapidly disrupting industries across the board. So it's not just the tech sector, because these are technologies that are being used in every business sector. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about AI, you know, artificial intelligence, which underneath that has, you know, machine learning and deep learning and neural nets. You have autonomous vehicles, and which is robots, drones. You know, again, you can think about, you know, the Tesla was kind of the laughing stock of the auto industry, and now everybody is not just following them in terms of electric, but following them in terms of autonomous. And I'm a proud Tesla owner, and I'm pretty excited to be able to press the button and have it go fully autonomous soon. I'm a big, you know, robots are going to be replacing a lot of jobs and automating a lot of what's going on. Then, you know, you have materials and 3D printing. You have networks and sensors. So Elon just put another 60 satellites up in space. So Elon and his buddies, Jeff Bezos and others, are in a race to put satellite system around the world. And soon we'll have 8 billion people, everybody on the planet, connected on 5G. And, you know, 5G means you can download a 2-hour movie in a second and a half. So that's going to change everything once we're all connected and have super high speed like we've never had. Virtual reality and augmented reality has gone from being like a novelty item for geeks to real business cases being used in education and treatment, like, for example, post-traumatic stress disorder. So you could be a psychologist listening to this and saying, oh, well, what he's talking about doesn't impact me. But the reality is it is, because if you're a psychologist, just as an example, I just picked that, you know, there's VR glasses being used to treat psychological symptoms, and there's AI looking at millions of data sets to understand patterns in patients and predict, you know, what might have somebody, you know, feel worse, or what's helped people feel better. If you're you know, if you're kind of any small business in America, if you're a restaurant, if you own a construction company, if it doesn't matter, every industry
right.
across the board is being impacted. So I started to get more juice by helping people learn what is going on, adopt what's available, and then for the ones that are brave, really innovate and create with it. So not just try to take something off the shelf, but how do we ask a question around, you know, what's really going to set this business, what's really going to 10x this business? You know, I don't want to just do like the minimal required before a sale. I really want to, you know, have a breakthrough. I want to give it a really good run at it. And our biggest constraint is X. Then we can look at, okay, how do these exponential, and it's not just exponential technologies, it's the convergence of these technologies that is causing the most disruption. So, you know, when you have VR and AI combined in the robot, as an example, maybe not
yeah.
like that, but you get my point.
It's pretty amazing, George. It sounds like you've taken some of the best tools out there and customized them to your own uses, and then compounded that or expanded on that by helping people understand what's out there and how they can apply it to their business. And there's so many busy business owners out there that you might be one of those listening that really needs to put your head up and look around and see what's going on and see what's out there, especially if you're concerned about selling in the next 3 to 5, maybe a little bit longer than that. But and if you're not, why are you listening to this show in the first place? So most of the people that might be listening might be saying, you know, I really need to get in touch. Maybe I should talk to George Bandarian about what he can do for my business. And George, what's the best way for our listeners to find out more and to get in touch with you?
Sure. So we created a page just specifically for your listeners. It's on my website, which is George Bandarian, BANDARIAN.com/exit coach. So if
Great.
They go there, all the different resources, tools that I mentioned are on there, and they can download stuff and check it out, or they could just book a call with me if they're ready to chat. I'd love to get on the phone with any of your listeners, and you know, that's what gives me juice these days. So I'd certainly welcome that.
And again, it's George Bandarian, BANDARIAN.com/exit coach if you want to find out more. And George, unfortunately, as often happens, our time has gone by too quickly, but I would love for you to follow up and we can kind of dissect and get into some of these areas a little bit deeper in future interviews. Would you come back and join us again?
Yes, I'd love to do that.
Very interesting stuff you're on to. I'm very interested in it, and I really thank you for joining me today, and I look forward to the next time we get to speak.
Likewise. Thank you, Bill. Talk soon.
Thanks, George. So rolling on, today, thank you again, once again, for joining us today, and very interesting interviews today. My next interview is with Joseph Nazarian Law Firm, where he's managing attorney here in Newport Beach. And Joseph's been with us before. Joe basically is a personal injury attorney and specializes in treating the client as a person rather than a number. And we're going to talk today about how an injured person can get representation and medical treatment for $0. Joe, are you with me today?
Yeah, hey, how are you doing today? It's a pleasure to be back on with you. How's everything going?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Very, very good. Thank you so much for joining me and including our listeners into this topic. It's, you know, we never know when something's going to happen and we're going to need your services, Joe. So it's important for us to know that you're out there. And but a lot of people are concerned that, wow, if I call an attorney, it's going to cost a lot of money. I don't know what I'm getting into. I don't know how they're going to treat me. I mean, we hear some of the radio ads and things like that out there, but the concern is, am I ever going to talk to the person who's, you know, behind the firm? Yeah, so tell us a little bit about you and your firm, and then let's get into the topic.
So, I mean, as you can see outside, it's definitely raining here in California, and I mean, this is a busy time of the year for me, but one of the concerns was when people are reaching out, you know, when they're calling a personal injury law firm, they want to make sure that they're actually talking to an attorney. One thing that I make sure at my firm is whenever they reach out, you will talk directly to an attorney, and they will make sure to give you a consultation on your case. Now, just to tell you a little bit about me and my business, I've had a personal injury firm in here in Newport Beach for about 5 years, but I've worked in the personal injury business for the better part of a decade now. And I've seen all types of accidents, anything from a slip and fall to a car accident, motorcycle accident, traumatic brain injuries, you name it. I've been involved with all of it. And one thing that does sometimes happen with a lot of people in our industry is a lot of the bigger firms and, you know, a lot of firms in general, they end up getting on so many clients that they don't get enough time to really connect with the clients on a personal level. And one thing that I think sets us apart from a lot of other firms is I make sure that all my attorneys give every single one of their clients their cell phone number so that they have direct access to each representative that they have in their case and is able to ask questions and reach out to them whenever they want.
That's excellent. So that's a personal service right there that somebody will know that they're not going to call into an answering service and maybe not get a call back for a while. They get to talk directly to an attorney. So how much is a consultation to discuss a case with you or your firm?
So one of the biggest things that I think people are just scared to reach out to attorneys, right? They're terrified. Attorneys charge an exorbitant amount of money when it comes to just asking us questions. At some firms, I've seen the range. It goes sometimes $300 for an associate, you have $400 for a junior partner, sometimes $600 an hour for a senior partner. And I've seen at the biggest firms, managing partners charge up to $1,000 an hour. And the general public, they hear these numbers and they know that's what attorneys are charging. So they're just scared. They don't want to call an attorney. They don't want to ask about a case. They're like, you know what, it's worth more trouble than I'm going to get back in the end if he's charging, you know, $600 an hour. That adds up very quickly. And so one thing that people don't know about personal injury cases is I will always give a free consultation. I will not charge you. You can call me and ask about your case and discuss your case, and I will not charge you a dollar. Even if I don't take the case, I don't send you an invoice later saying that you owe me for my time. I will still be more than willing to discuss the case with anyone. And I think a lot of firms might not go that far, but I really think that just conversing with somebody, and a lot of times you just need to let them know. Like, a lot of people think they have such a strong case or that they have a case. And I am more than willing to explain to them that, you know, here, sir, you're the one that actually broke the law. Or in this scenario, actually, you know, it could be that you're found to be at fault. But no matter what, in any situation, I will never charge for that consultation. And so my advice is, if you do work with a personal injury firm, don't be scared to call them, because they will usually offer you that consultation for $0. And you should definitely reach out and ask the questions that you have on your mind.
What are some of the items that people should have prepared before they call you to make best use of your valuable time, since you're offering this at no cost? Are there certain things that you find that, you know, you're going to want to know the facts of the case, obviously, but are there certain identifiers or things that you want people to have ready when they call in?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have a pamphlet that I like to give out to all my clients and friends, and if anybody would like one, I literally have a pamphlet that I give to people. And in case you're ever in an accident, God forbid you are, you know, I hope that you will never need my services, but if you do need my services out there, you basically need to get certain information. And some of that information is, it happens right when the accident occurs. That's the most critical moment for a lot of the stuff that I need to know on my end. You know, examples are, if you're in an accident, you're going to want to film the whole surrounding area, right? Because let's say there's something blocking your view, that's going to be an important piece of information. If there's a certain sequence with lights, then there's important information. If there's a crosswalk and it's a busy crosswalk, let's say that you're saying there was someone in the crosswalk, you couldn't make the turn, or if it's heavy traffic, all of these things are important. So when the accident occurs, it's very important that you document it correctly, you take pictures, you take photos of exactly where the car is when the accident happened, take videos of what happened, and make sure you gather that. Then the second most important information is, you're going to want to get me your insurance information, and then you're going to want to be able to just get me the police report information. After that, I pretty much handle everything. there's not a lot that needs to be done by the client, and I always tell them, they have one job after I sign them up and I get the initial info. Their only job is to get better, and that is the main focus of my representation, is we want to heal the client, we want to get them the best medical treatment possible, and we want to make sure that we get them as close to 100% as possible. And if there's one thing that's true in my business, is I'm not God. You know, no amount of money is going to get them back to 100%. The only thing we can do is get them medical treatment that can get them as close to 100% as possible, and so that's our focus.
That's great advice. Now, a lot of times when people are injured in a situation, they're in a bit of a state of shock, kind of figuring out what happened, and they might say things that they shouldn't say at that point. They might apologize or something like that to someone. What's your best advice for what to say if you're injured or you're in a situation where so that you don't make a case against yourself, because you might not know all the circumstances. If you've got hit out of nowhere and you're, for instance, you might just be in shock and maybe you didn't really realize what happened.
You know, this happens to a lot of clients. One thing that I can say is no matter what happens in an accident, never come out of it admitting that you're at fault. But I think that one's a little bit of a no-brainer, but you'll be shocked how many people come out just yelling, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And I'll give you a piece of advice too. Even when they do apologize, a lot of times when people think they're at fault, it's actually the other person who caused the accident. And you'll end up finding later on, let's say through a police report, oh, the other person was actually drunk. And so one thing is, if there's someone that's intoxicated while driving, it doesn't matter what happened in the accident. They will always be found to be at fault. It's a statutory presumption of negligence, which means that the law says that even if it wasn't their fault, you know, due to a violation of a civil penal code, that they're still found to be at fault because they were drunk. So never come out of the accident saying it's your fault, it's your fault. The best thing you can do is just document everything, call the police. The police are going to take an unbiased report of what happened, because obviously you have an interest to not be at fault. Another party has an interest to not be at fault. So it's good to have the police come in, take evidence, find out exactly what happened, and then I will have a solid report based on the actual facts of the case later on that I can look at and work with.
Great. Great advice. Okay, so once somebody decides, you know, they give you a call and they get their free consultation and you say, okay, well, we'll take you on as a client. What does it cost to retain your firm?
So, a lot of people do not know that pretty much every single personal injury attorney out there will work on a contingency fee basis. This is different than most attorneys. Most of them take an upfront retainer. And an upfront retainer means that you're going to give the attorney, let's say, $10,000. And as he does work, he will remove that from his trust account and put it into his company's working account or into his own personal business account. And with my firm and with most personal injury firms, we work on a contingency fee basis. What that means is we charge the client $0 upfront, and we take a portion of the settlement at the end, so they don't have to pay a dollar for our services throughout the entire representation. And that representation can be sometimes half a year. It could be a year, 2 years. I worked on cases that have lasted 3 or 4 years before, and the client does not have to pay a dollar upfront. We take our payment out of the settlement at the end, and it's usually a third of the settlement. If it goes to mediation, trial, or arbitration, then 40%, and if it goes all the way through trial, 45%. And the reason those percentages go up is because there's significantly more work at each stage of the case. And so that's why those prices go up in time or go up at the different phases of the litigation or the pre-litigation. So if you have any questions about that, you're more than welcome to call me, and there's a full contingency agreement that lists all of those details to the client. But there's zero upfront cost to the client in regards to my representation.
Well, that's terrific, and that takes a lot of the pressure off of the client, obviously, and their concern. So if someone needs medical treatment when they're injured in an accident, how much can that treatment cost?
Oh, man. So let's say you're injured in an accident, right, and you break some vertebrae, you have some bulge discs. You can't really walk much anymore. And the thing about that is, you know, all your bills still keep coming in. But the only thing is that you're injured now, but your life still goes on. So now you have to go to a chiropractor. You have to go to a spine specialist. You have to go to an orthopedic surgeon. You have to go get checked out for an MRI. And, you know, I can list probably about 10 doctors that you might have to see with a serious injury like that. And the one thing that all of these doctors have in common is that they cost a lot of money, thousands, and I've seen cases with millions of dollars in medical bills before. But the good news is that depending on the facts of your case, but many times, I can provide you the best medical treatment, the gold standard, with some of the best physicians in the state of California, and they will do it on a lien basis. And what that means is that they will work on you for free, no upfront costs, and they will take their payment out of the settlement. And not only will they take their payment out of the settlement, but let's say we don't settle for what we expect due to any unforeseen circumstances, they, since they have a working relationship with me, they will reduce their bills. 50% I've seen sometimes. You know, there's no guarantee, but based on the facts, they will reduce their bills significantly just so we can put more money in the client's pocket at the end of the day. And what this does is it just provides a stress-free relationship between me and my clients and the case. The client isn't sitting there worried about every single penny they have to spend just to get better and heal themselves. They have one job, focus all their emotions, their physical energy, their time into getting better. And when they do that, there is much better results. And I can, you know, look my clients in the eye and be like, I've done everything to help you, and I am glad that I got you back to 100% after this horrific accident. And I am able to provide great medical treatment without stressing them out, without stressing their families out, and being able to do so in an amicable manner and working with the best of the business.
I'm talking with Joseph Nazarian of the Nazarian Law Firm, where he's the managing attorney. And, you know, Joe, you really painted a great picture for our listeners as far as, you know, number one, they're under a great deal of stress, maybe confusion as to what just happened. They need to do something and take some action quickly. This is not something that you want to sit on. I would imagine you want to get in touch as soon as possible, right after an accident. You don't want to wait a day or two or three on this. You want to really get on top of this, right?
One thing I can tell you is this. So I'm different than most attorneys, as in I give my clients my cell phone number, and some attorneys think I'm crazy for it. But something I learned very early on working in the personal injury business is accidents don't just happen from 9 to 5. Very, very real. I got a call last night at 1 in the morning from a friend. He was driving home, and he had got an accident. And actually, funny story, this client, I literally had settled a previous accident for him. That day, we had gotten the check, and he was ready to settle, and then he got rear-ended again that same night. And I was available to him. I answered my phone. I walked him through the process again of what to do, make sure, you know, he had all the questions. And he had my pamphlet with him, thank God. He got all the information he needed. He documented everything, and then it was, you know, easygoing. But people need to understand that they need their attorney available to them when the accident happens, because like you pointed out, most people's brains turn off when they're in an accident. They're in shock. They're freaking out. They're worried about, you know, going to the hospital. They're worried about what they got to do the next day. They're worried about missing work, and they don't document what happened properly. And so it's very important to be able to have access to your attorney to make sure that you document things properly and that we're available to them on a basis that doesn't stress them out.
Now, Joe, I'm going to share something else that I know about you, and that is that you are well-networked by being in a group called Provisors that we're both part of that has thousands and thousands of other professionals. So, for instance, if someone needs a referral to someone else that in the event that they happen to find themselves in, that you're a great resource as far as that's concerned. And we both attend meetings where we have many advisors, and other advisors give accolades for service that they've received or their clients have received from certain advisors. And your name usually comes up where someone says, I am so happy that my client called Joseph Nazarian and his law firm because they took immediate care of them. And they really, again, as you said, give them the personal touch and the assurance that everything's going to be okay. And hey, this in many circumstances, this won't cost you anything. Let us go to work and help you take care of things. So thank you on behalf of Provisors members out there and their clients. You've done a great job with them. Any other last tips you'd like to share with our listeners?
My best tip is just don't be afraid of attorneys. I understand that there's a lot of stigmas out there where everybody hears about these huge bills and, you know, and dealing with some people out there that, you know, a couple of people can give a lot of bad name. Just reach out if you ever need any assistance. And like Bill pointed out, we're part of networks of genuine attorneys that really care about their clients and want to help each other. And people within these networks, such as Provisors or like BNI or other networking groups, whatever they may be, there are genuinely good people out there that do care about their clients. And if you do need help and you do need connections to any sort of legal assistance or just connections to professionals that really are going to put the client first and their interest and their needs before the dollar, then feel free to reach out to Bill. I know he knows a million people and can always connect you with the best business professional. And if you need help getting any sort of legal assistance, I have a Rolodex of 75 attorneys that I can connect you to at a moment's notice. And pretty much all of them will give you a free consultation, no matter what type of law it is, just to discuss the matter with you. We are open resources, and I really appreciate you letting me or letting your radio show be a platform for me and other professionals, and I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. You know, it's great to know that you have someone on your speed dial, so I would encourage you just to take down this number, office number, 949-764-3402. That's the Nazarian Law Firm, Joseph Nazarian. And if ever you need, or you know, let's face it, you can't drive 5 miles on the freeway without seeing a fender bender on the side of the road. Somebody might be hurt there. It might be somebody that you know. If someone you know needs that kind of help, give the Nazarian Law Firm a call for personal service that you won't regret. Thank you so much, Joseph. I appreciate you being on once again. It's always great to see you when I see you out there, and I look forward to the next time we speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. And I just wanted to go one more. I'm going to actually give everyone my cell phone number because I like to stick to what I say. My personal cell phone is 949-690-6211. If you ever need to reach me, feel free to call that number. I'd be more than willing to help any way I can. I hope you have a fantastic day, Bill, and thank you again for having me on your wonderful show.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this.
Hey everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on exitcoachradio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.